Welcome to CounselorAudioSource.net. Counselor Audio Source is a weekly podcast dedicated to the professional enhancement of practicing counselors, supervisors, and counselor educators. Look for us on the web at CounselorAudioSource.net. This week on Counselor Audio Source, Dennis G. Vollmer, director of the Intensive Residential Treatment Center at Father Flanagan's Boys Home, speaks about Boys Town Residential Treatment with Counselor Audio Source contributing editor, Dr. Teresa O'Halloran.
Welcome to CounselorAudioSource.net. This is Dr. Teresa O'Halloran, and today I'm speaking with Dennis Vollmer of the Girls and Boys Town Intensive Residential Treatment Center. I was stumbling over the name there. Boys Town is a large organization, but Dennis is the director of
Yes.
the Intensive Residential Treatment Center here Yes. in Omaha, Nebraska, and we're honored today to speak with him. So welcome, Dennis.
Thank you for having me.
Today, as we talked about, you're going to help us understand the continuum of care for adolescent treatment.
Yes.
I know Boys Town offers a variety of treatments for adolescents and their families.
Yes.
But let's start with finding out about you.
Okay.
What's your background in working with adolescents and Boys Town?
Well, this is about all I know. I graduated from college in 1986 with a counseling degree from Wayne State College in Wayne, Nebraska. Actually, my wife and I both graduated from that college. And 1 month after leaving school, we were hired as family teachers at Boys Town in September of 1986. So married a short amount of time, about 4 months, and starting a new job as a family teacher, living with eight adolescent girls for
wow.
almost 6 years. That's how we started in working with Boys Town. And, now I'm currently provisionally licensed mental health practitioner, soon to be licensed very, very soon. I passed all my coursework, and in the course of after becoming a family teacher, became an administrator in various capacities, a clinical specialist on campus, administrative training program, and eventually became the director of the specialized treatment foster care program. Did that for 10 years. And that's one of the programs on campus for mostly little kids, but using the same family-style model that you hear about that is used on the West Campus, but with fewer kids because they're younger and more needy. Did that for 10 years and then was the treatment group home director on campus, which is a more restrictive level of care, working with boys and girls, shift staff program. Did that for 3 years. And then came over to the most restrictive program we have, which is the current program I now reside in, which is the Intensive Residential Treatment Center. So I've been the director of a couple of programs. As a matter of fact, started the respite program as well as when I was on campus, and that's a program that services main campus. There's 500 kids on main campus, and there's a respite program for kids who are really struggling. They came to me, too. So been working with kids a long time.
And boy, as you described that, there's so much. We're going to get into some of the detail of those programs as we talk today. So
it's really a safety net for our kids. I mean, a kid comes into Boys Town, we have various programs that can help their individual needs, their individual issues. And because, as we know, kids have a variety of skill levels, developmental levels, behavioral levels, and we can service virtually all of them now with our continuum of care.
That's amazing. So that's what I was first thinking. So lay out for us slowly, what are the levels involved in the continuum of care and what might characterize each level?
Okay, well, let me start from probably least restrictive on up. I think that may be the way to go. And we have various programs that are actually designed to hopefully keep children out of placements, which could be a parent training program that we have, family preservation programs, you know, even a shelter. We have shelters across the country. And this isn't just Omaha, too. Boys Town is a far-reaching organization throughout the country. And so we have programs that are hopefully designed to keep them maybe out of placement, such as parent training. We have behavioral pediatrics and an outpatient behavioral health counselors and therapists that can help work with children while they're not in placement. So I think that's very cool. We have shelters throughout the country, and then when you start thinking about levels of care, I start looking then at the main campus program, the 500 children that are on the main campus of Boys Town. But we also have residential group homes across the country. The old Boys Town movie with Mickey Rooney, it's a lot different now. Mm-hmm. I mean, there used to be 1,000 kids on campus, and it was mostly orphaned children back then. Mm-hmm. Now, orphans constitute a very small percentage, maybe less than 1% of all children that are on campus. They're children that are privately referred, court referred, they're on probation, the state of Nebraska or the state of Michigan, whatever, has asked for our services. And those are children that are still able to live in a family-style program. Okay, that's the Boys Town main campus, the group homes. So they are still able to live in a family. And these family teachers have children of their own in many respects. And those children are going to regular high schools, mm-hmm. Participating in sports activities. And so a lot of what is available to children throughout the country are available in those group homes, just mm-hmm. with professional parents. That's your distinction.
So right. If I could interrupt mm-hmm. for a sec, I have driven through the campus and yes. I've seen the homes.
Yes.
And they're standalone homes, so each house may have six children or so with...
Six to eight. Most of them mm-hmm. have eight. Mm-hmm. And they're a standalone home with a married couple, children of their own. They have their own budget. They have to do their own grocery shopping. They got to mow their own lawns. Everything that a typical home would do, they do as a family. Huh. They go to movies together. They go to sporting events together. Go to parent-teacher conferences together. I mean, certainly we involve the family of origin whenever possible, but in essence, they're a surrogate family for these children.
Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm. Sounds wonderful.
It is. It mm-hmm. is a neat program. Then, in the progression, then I talked about the specialized treatment foster care program that is really very similar to the group homes I just described. A married couple, an assistant family teacher, and I didn't talk about the assistant family teacher, but there is an assistant that works in every home as well that works 45 hours a week that assists that family teacher in the treatment milieu of that particular home. And when I say treatment milieu, I'm talking about they're teaching social skills, independent living skills, academic skills, really trying to teach the children pro-social skills in response to all of the poor behaviors that they've learned throughout their childhood or whatever. But the specialized treatment foster care program is kind of the next step up. And married couple, family teacher, but only four children in those homes. Only four. And there's a reason for that. And I was the director mm-hmm. of that program for many, many years, and it's a wonderful program. They still go to the Boys Town School. And that's the only one of its origin in the whole country. That's the only program that we have as far as specialized treatment foster care. But they can participate in sports, and hopefully the average length of stay for those children is about 4 to 6 months, maybe a little bit more than that. And maybe they'll go home from there, or maybe they'll go to the campus program from there. It's a little more restrictive in that there's just more adults, fewer kids. And then on campus, we also have the specialized treatment group homes, which I was a director of for 3 years. Three homes of 13 kids each. We have two boys' homes and one girl's home for a total of 39. We actually have a capacity of 40, but typically 39 kids. And that's a shift staff program, 24-hour awake night staff. These children need more supervision. They're not quite ready for that family-style program. We have our own school system for those particular kids, so they're going to school not with the main campus population, they are going together in more of a self-contained classroom area located right there on campus. So we have four special education teachers there. So they're really, and that school is year-round. The kids, you know, of course, for the holidays they get some time off, but kids are typically behind. And that average length of stay is, again, around 4 months. It seems like most of them around 4 to 6 months. And mm-hmm. And it could be less if the children are doing better. They could be less amount of time, or it could be more, depending on the severity of the behaviors. But typically going to see kids who are maybe a little more aggressive, more oppositional. They certainly have to carry a DSM-4 diagnosis. That's a requirement for children to be in that level of care. but a wonderful program nonetheless. We have therapists right there in the program, shift managers, a lot more shift involvement, if you will. So shifts are coming in, 8 hours later, another shift's coming in, 8 hours later, another shift's coming in. And so it's designed so that we can have fresh staff with some more difficult children. Mm-hmm. But it's not locked. I need to emphasize that. Mm-hmm. It's not locked. And so children are free to some extent to come and go. Now, would we follow them and would we call the police if we needed to? Yes, we would. Mm-hmm. But it is certainly less restrictive than my current program, which is the IRTC, or the Intensive Residential Treatment Center, which I am the director of currently.
Mm-hmm.
Again, shift staff, 8 hours in, 8 hours, next group comes in. These children are some of the more difficult in the entire state of Nebraska that reside right here. We serve a lot of kids from the state of Nebraska and a lot of kids from all over the country. We've actually had a child from Ireland here.
Mm-hmm.
And average length of stay is approaching about 4.5 to 5 months here. Again, if you do very, very well, that stay could be significantly shorter. However, we have had some children, even since I've been here, that have been approaching over a year's length of time here, which is uncommon, but their behaviors are such that they need to be here. Must carry a DSM-4 diagnosis. We have therapists on staff, just like the treatment group home, very involved with the treatment milieu. We have a medical director that sees the children at minimum one time per week here. And our medical director also sees them in the treatment group homes, but not as frequently.
Mm-hmm.
Medications are a typical important component of the IRTC, the program I'm in, as well as the treatment group home. Because our children seem to have a lot of behaviors that are somewhat out of control or are difficult to manage, sometimes medications are effective in assisting us so that they are more teachable. I think that's the way to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Many of our children have been abused sexually, physically. Because of that, they may carry some other diagnoses such as post-traumatic stress, depression, attachment disorders. Those types of things are very common diagnoses that we work here. Certainly depression, ADHD, oppositional defiance, conduct disorder are all some very typical diagnoses that we work with here.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I like the most about our program, or maybe not the most, but it's a very high on the priority list, is that we are very, very in tune with the reduction of medications, psychotropic medications. It's sad to see children coming into our program that are on multiple 5, 6, and 7 psychotropic medications.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come to us and they're very having a difficult time functioning, even walking
mm-hmm.
sometimes,
sure.
because they're sedated. And our medical director, Dr. Doug Spellman, is very good about, trying to limit the amount of medications, decrease them as much as possible. And as behaviors become more ingrained and become a part of them, we can continue to decrease medications. I think an important illustration of that is in 2005, we had, I believe, out of the 80 graduates of Boys Town High School on the campus, I think approximately 20 of those children started in our continuum of care, either at the IRTC, that I'm currently the Intensive Residential Treatment Center, or the treatment group home.
Mm-hmm.
20 of those children started with us. Of those 20, 18 were on medications when they started.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was like a total of about 38 medications between those 18 children. So
mm-hmm.
over 2 per child.
Mm-hmm.
At the time of graduation from high school, they were on 0. All 18 of those children were on no medications whatsoever, no psychotropic medications.
Wow.
That, to me, is a testament of the program.
Absolutely.
It's a testament mm-hmm. of what we do and the continuity of care that we have.
Mm-hmm.
From 36 or 38 medications to 0.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're curious to see what it was like in 2004. We're thinking, wow, I wonder how good that was. So we're looking back.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to see how many graduates started within our behavioral health programs graduated and how many medications they're on. So we're real curious to see if we had, you know, to me that's somewhat of an aberration that, wow, zero, you know, but we're very pleased. We're very pleased with that.
We're very amazing pleased. Finding.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So we're thrilled with that finding.
Yeah. So, boy, you just filled us with a lot of information there. So let me recap
There's
a moment
lot.
And
yeah.
see where we are. So you said basically there are four main levels of treatment, the intensive residential, the specialized treatment group homes, the specialized foster care, and then
The family group homes. Okay. Those are the main out-of-home placements.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I didn't mention was the respite program that's located on campus. And that's a 24-hour shift program that serves the kids on campus, the group homes, because sometimes those kids really struggle. Or maybe something happens where there's a violent episode or where it really is best for that child to live in that 24-hour setting for a while. And that average length of stay is about 14 to 20 days.
Mm-hmm.
Try to control the crisis, deal with the problem, and hopefully get them reintegrated back into the family. We started that, I want to say about 5 or 6 years ago. It's been a wonderful program. We think we've saved a lot of children's placements by having that particular program. We have one for boys and one for girls.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all part of the group home program.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So most of them, you said, 4 to 5 months average stay. What about the family group homes?
The family group home is longer. Family group home is longer. We really ask for... at least a commitment of a year,
mm-hmm.
at the minimum, a commitment of a year to really integrate into that family style program. Research has indicated that staying longer than a year in a facility such as that, a family style program, is beneficial. And I think for many of our children who have had difficulties in their families, have really had a difficult time living in a family, whether it's a foster home, the practice that Boys Town can provide them in that group home setting is invaluable.
Mm-hmm.
Because in many cases, it's taken 14, 15, 16 years of learning how to maybe behave poorly mm-hmm. and to get their needs met in an antisocial way. It's not going to take a few months to fix that. It's going to take repetition, skills practicing, and before that becomes more internalized. So.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as I said, out of the 80 graduates last year, 20 of them started here or in TG, the treatment group home.
Mm-hmm.
So they've stepped down and gotten more practice living in a family.
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference. The IRTC, my program here, the Intensive Residential Treatment Center and the treatment group home, they're not quite ready for that family integration. So mm-hmm. we're trying to get them ready for that.
Right. So. And then... So that's increasing levels of observation, direction, safety. More safety levels are put in place.
In this particular program,
mm-hmm.
absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we probably have some of the more difficult kids in the state of Nebraska, as well as the most acute. The children that come into the IRTC, or the Intensive Residential Treatment Center, come to us frequently from inpatient levels of care, or from other residential treatment centers, so they're they're in crisis.
Mm-hmm.
So we do see some of that self-harming behavior, the cutting from the girls, especially the depression, and so our safety features are pretty, I would say, impressive here.
Mm-hmm.
We have motion detectors in our rooms, for instance, because all of our children will have a roommate. And so for added safeguards, we have a motion detector in there. So if there's any movement that would cross, you know, in the bedroom, we would want to know that.
Mm-hmm.
We would want to know that to protect the safety of our children. We have motion detectors in the hallways. We have cameras in the hallways that are mostly for quality assurance and performance improvement of our staff.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make sure our staff are, first of all, awake. are checking the children a minimum of 4 times per hour. That's my expectation, that they're physically getting into the rooms to make sure our children are safe. Our doors are left open at night so that they can hear and see what's going on. So
mm-hmm.
We try to promote a very safe environment here. As you go down levels of care, because the level of acuity has hopefully subsided, you're not going to have that, especially in the family homes. Those family teachers go to bed like a typical family would do. They're going to be expected to get up occasionally and check those children, but that level of intensity regarding surveillance and safety isn't as high.
Mm-hmm.
Because their behaviors hopefully are at a level now where it doesn't need that intense security measures.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So as you go down, you'll see less of that amount of attention to that type of detail.
Mm-hmm. So. And I hear, I'm wondering as well, if in the intensive residential treatment center, the treatment, quote unquote, treatment that the children receive, like you said, it involves medication.
Yes.
It also, I imagine, involves therapy plus some psychoeducation. And as you go down, it would be more psychoeducation or cognitive behavioral skills based.
Yeah, I think that's very right. Our model here is referred to as a psychoeducational model.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is the integration of the program, the famous Boys Town program that's adapted for our level of care. And it's the integration of medicine. It's a medical model. So you got your therapist, you got your supervising practitioner, a medical director, individual, a psychiatrist. So it's the melding of the two. Certainly, there's an academic component. There's as well as a spiritual component for those children who are requesting that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the melding of all of that and the integration and the communication of all that, which is to say the least, sometimes very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
When I have 40 children in this program with 4 and 5 therapists and multiple shifts of individuals, individualized treatment is a necessity, but it's also difficult at times.
Mm-hmm.
to get that communication done
mm-hmm.
effectively.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, individual therapy occurs one time per week. Family therapy, if available, if reasonable, occurs generally twice per month. And group therapy occurs 3 times per week here. So there's a lot more of that level mm-hmm. of intensity at our level of care, IRTC, and treatment group home.
Mm-hmm.
As you step down to the group home level of care on campus, a great deal less of that.
Mm-hmm.
There might not be a psychiatrist involved at all.
Mm-hmm.
There might not be a therapist involved at all. There may be, but it depends on their level. Where here, all of them see a psychiatrist. All of them see a therapist. All of them mm-hmm. go to group, individual, family. And it's part of that medical model.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Right. So one of the things that I wonder about is how youth are evaluated. You mentioned that they're medically evaluated by the psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
But more maybe if you could give us a bigger picture of how they're evaluated and then placed at the appropriate treatment.
Yes. Any child that goes into the 3 levels of care, being specialized treatment foster care, treatment group home, and IRTC, all have to meet medical necessity. At the group home level on campus, they do not. Those 3 programs, kind of the acronym programs, I guess, that IRTC, TGH, and STFC, all are managed care programs.
Okay.
Which is interesting to say the least. And when we talk, and so when they're placed in those particular programs, Magellan or Medicaid has to be in agreement with the caseworker, the case managers, as to what level is the most appropriate, if that makes sense. And that's
mm-hmm.
a recommendation from a psychiatrist or a psychologist to what level of care is appropriate. And so that's kind of based on how they're placed. We get a lot of referrals, and we have a great lady named Jody Gasper, who's our access coordinator. So she kind of coordinates the admissions into the IRTC and the treatment group home level of care. And we pretty much know what they're asking for. You know, this child is going to the intensive residential treatment center or the treatment group home, and then myself and Jody and Dr. Spellman, our medical director, kind of make the decisions as to whether they're appropriate for us. So we have we already know up front which level of care they're requesting. But some of the behaviors that might define that would be, again, acuity, severity, intensity, Certainly with the aggression behaviors, we have a lot more aggressive kids here. Children who aren't as stable in their self-harming related behaviors would come to me here at the IRTC rather than the treatment group.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a delicate dance, and there's Jody has been reading these files for a long time. She is able to kind of help determine whether or not it's an appropriate fit for what level of care. But Magellan and Medicaid help make that application to the appropriate level of care based on behavior. That's mm-hmm. a long answer, but I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's helpful. Some of our listeners won't have been involved in the assessment process and understanding placement, so I think that's helpful. Yeah.
And then the way that Medicaid and Magellan stay involved is that we do utilization review. Another important term to know mm-hmm. is that we are reporting to a reviewer the level of behavior, the progress or lack of progress, to a reviewer who can then authorize a longer stay or a shorter stay for our children. Mm-hmm. That's the managed care part of it. So when we talk about a child who's been here less than 4 months, it's probably because the managed care or the Medicaid reviewer is in agreement with us that, hey, this child doesn't fit the criteria to stay here any longer.
Mm-hmm.
Let's step them down to another level of care that's less restrictive. And that certainly is our goal, is to not have any child in a level of care that is any more restrictive than it has to be.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we are not in agreement, but for the most part, we have a very good working relationship with Medicaid and the third-party payers that pay for the children to be here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great. And certainly with all the services provided, that's not a low-cost venture.
No, they're not.
So that insurance is really needed.
It is needed. And when you think about the integration of therapy and psychiatry and just the sheer mass of individuals that I need just here at the IRTC to manage 40 children of this acuity, it is not an inexpensive program.
Mm-hmm.
But I know, based on what I know with Boys Town, a very worthwhile program. I think we're very well thought of in the community for how we work with children.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. We've provided a great deal of information about all the levels. I'm still a little curious about the family group homes. That's the one I know the least about, and I think is unique to Boys Town, or the model is anyway. So could you tell me some about maybe starting from how parents might be selected and trained and what kind of models are used in that program?
The family teachers, yes.
Mm-hmm.
We're always looking for great parents. And it's not just anybody who can do that job. I mean, I did it for nearly 6 years with my wife. And my wife is still at Boys Town, by the way, so we're both career people. A lot of people from all over the country apply to be family teachers. And I don't know what the exact ratio is right now, but maybe only 1 out of 8 or 1 out of 10 of those who apply will actually become family teachers in our organization. Because we're very selective, and we have to be. You're working with 8 boys or 8 girls, and that's not easy. And these children, even on the main campus, even in the traditional group home, they're not easy. That's mm-hmm. why they're not in their home any longer.
Mm-hmm.
But they are hired, they go through a very, very intensive 2 to 3 week. It's 2 weeks of intensive pre-service training, and then ongoing training until they leave. I mean, all the time they're receiving training. Strong consultation component, strong consultation where an administrator is working with them, helping to design treatment plans for each individual child, discussing their academic needs, their medical needs, everything. I mean, a real true team effort with the family teachers, the assistant family teacher, and that consultant. And that consultant is in those homes a great deal, observing and watching to make sure that model, the family home model, is being incorporated as designed. And
mm-hmm.
and the model might be confusing. Well, what is the model? Well, it's a teaching model. It's reinforcing positive behaviors and correcting inappropriate behaviors and providing alternative replacement behaviors. And integrating spirituality and academics and sports and a feeling of community. And if you've ever been out to Boys Town, it is a community. It's a village. And it's you know, there's over 500 children right there on that campus that live in that group home environment. And if you've ever been there on a Friday night during the football games, we pack the place. And it's just really a neat, you know, they say a village raises a child. That's true. And we believe that, and that every adult on that campus, from a guy fixing a dishwasher to the director of the whole campus, is there for one reason, and that's to help children. And it's probably the safest square mile in the entire country. Even though there's difficult kids there, there's a lot of adults looking out for everybody. So it's really a neat place to work and live.
Sounds interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of my last questions that I had written down was, what are some key skills for practitioners who might want to work in these various settings? And mm-hmm. you really kind of answered that there a bit for the family group home. I don't have the right term.
The family teachers.
Teachers.
Yes.
What, I don't know if you have anything to add about the other levels of care, if some specific skills a practitioner would want to develop.
Anybody who wants to, when you're saying practitioner, are you talking about even people coming in at an entry-level position mm-hmm. to work with children? Mm-hmm. I interview a lot of people. On a weekly basis, I interview a lot of our behavioral health technicians, which is the fancy term for our wonderful people that work with our kids here.
Uh-huh.
Our staff.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be patient. You got to be kind. You got to be energetic. You got to be motivated. I tell my staff, you're going to go home tired. I know that. You're going to go home tired. I guarantee it. But how do you want to go home tired? Do you want to go home tired because you're dealing with negative behavior and being reactive to behavior and just dealing with a lot of negative junk? I said, is that how you want to do it? Or do you want to go home tired being proactive and positive and engaging and teaching positively to the kids and setting them up for success and really working your tail off to be proactive rather than reactive? I said, because you can do it either way. And I think the other way is so much better because you're trying to be upbeat and positive. I tell my staff, don't be a morale drain. It's not good for any of us. It's not good for the kids. And they see that and they watch it. Be a morale booster. You know, if you're positive with the kids, and how you present yourself with the kids makes a huge difference. And so I really look for energetic, positive people. And you know, sometimes people say, well, I got no experience working with kids. Well, neither did I. Neither did I. I was right out of college, graduated in August, started here in September. No experience except for coaching. But I think they saw that I was energetic and robust and positive and... kids say to me now, you know, gosh, do you ever get upset or frustrated? Yeah, but you just don't know it. And that's what I'm trying to get you guys to understand is control yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Have self-control so that we don't have to control you. That's another thing that I think I'd emphasize. Our level of care at IRTC, the children don't have as much self-control. That's because we have locked doors here, seclusion rooms for those kids who are really struggling, timeout rooms. It's very, very secure. As you become more adept at using self-control, controlling yourself, you can go live in a family. And that's kind of what I'm trying to emphasize mm-hmm. to our children here. Mm-hmm. So,
kind of a motivating idea for them.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. And I tell them, you're being controlled more than you want to be. You're locked in. You know, we don't want that for you. We want you to have unlocked doors and live in a family and go to a regular school and live with your family if at all possible. That's the ultimate goal. But you got to control yourself. Right now, people believe that you cannot control yourself, and so you're here with us.
Mm-hmm.
Let's work to get that changed.
Mm-hmm. Very positive, very
mm-hmm.
positive.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think we've covered it quite well. I wonder if you have any final thoughts you'd want to make?
I don't think so. For those who are listening, Boys Town's a wonderful place to be, a wonderful place to work at. If you've never visited, especially out at West Campus, it's a great place to visit. I mean, gorgeous, beautiful, motivating. I've been here 20 years. I wouldn't be here 20 years if I didn't like what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife wouldn't be there for 20 years if she didn't like what she was doing. And it's a great place to work with if you love kids. So I welcome anybody who wants to visit to do so. And if anybody wants to contact me directly, they can do that as well.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for this interview.
You're very welcome.
I know, and we will be putting on the podcast notes links to Boys Town website.
Yes.
There are resources there you wanted to point out to folks.
Yes, there's the Boys Town Press, as well as there is a Boys Town website that you can go on to and look at the history of Father Flanagan when he, you know, I never even talked about Father Flanagan, but he's the one that started it back in, I believe, 1918. So there's a lot of historical information and then a lot of discussion on our individual programs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great website to visit.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, again, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
You've just heard an interview with Dennis G. Vollmer, the director of the Intensive Residential Treatment Center at Father Flanagan's Boys Home, with our Counselor Audio Source contributing editor, Dr. Teresa O'Halloran. Look for previous podcasts, show notes, and listener feedback on the podcast website at counselaraudiosource.net. Listeners can leave comments or questions for our interview guests or hosts through our Skype.com internet telephone ID, Counselor Audio Source, or by calling 330-871-4015. Counseling techniques and interventions discussed in the Counselor Audio Source broadcast are meant for use by counseling professionals, and Counselor Audio Source is not held liable for any use of the techniques mentioned in the program. Our music bed today is Memorial Day from Jamie Beauchamp. His and other PodSafe music can be found in the PodSafe Music Network at podshow.com. Counselor Audio Source is licensed under the Creative Commons, a nonprofit organization offering a flexible copyright for creative work.